Afghanistan's rulers say their border with Pakistan doesn't exist. They call the current demarcation imaginary. One senior Taliban minister even claimed that Afghan territory extends as far as the Attock Bridge, deep inside Pakistan. That's not isolated rhetoric, it echoes a broader sentiment within the Taliban government, where many see the border as an illegitimate colonial line drawn more than a century ago. The recent clashes along the border prove the point. After months of rising tensions and sporadic attacks, the situation boiled over into open conflict in early October. Both sides exchanged artillery, gunfire, and airstrikes, and each blamed the other for starting the fight. The timing could hardly be worse. Since 2025, more than 2 million Afghan refugees have been deported from Iran and Pakistan, with some estimates placing the total closer to 3.4 million. The United Nations has warned that this mass return is compounding instability in a country already crippled by economic collapse, food shortages, and weak governance. Renewed conflict in Afghanistan would not remain contained. Its shockwaves would inevitably reach across the region. History offers a grim warning. For centuries, Afghanistan buried empires that sought to conquer it. Yet now, in chasing the ghosts of lost glory, it risks joining them in the same soil. Now, I want to take a moment to talk about today's sponsor, Dolly Varden Silver. And there is a reason why I'm highlighting it to you today. Donald Trump's push for American resource independence is reigniting a decades-old battle for control of critical minerals against countries like China and Russia. The Silver Institute says 2025 marks the fifth straight year of a global silver deficit, and production just can't keep up. The world's leaders know this, and silver is skyrocketing to all-time highs. So, this is the breakout opportunity for the silver market. Dolly Varden Silver is a pure silver company based in Canada's Golden Triangle, one of the richest mining regions in the world. In the last three decades, it produced over 1.2 billion ounces of silver worth over $68 billion. The Brucejack mine, located directly beside Dolly Varden, sold for $3.5 billion in 2022. Dolly Varden has billionaire backers, including mining legends Eric Sprott and Rick Rule. They just recently raised $30 million, and the management grew the company from a $20 million to a $500 million market cap, and that wasn't in a bull market. This is why Dolly Varden is my number one silver stock in this market. Check out ticker DVS on NYC and DV on TSX. Visit the link below to learn more about the company and invest through Orbiton, which is securely integrated with all major brokerages. And, as always, make sure to do your own due diligence. This is not investment advice. Since taking control of Afghanistan in August 2021, the Taliban has allowed militant groups to operate freely inside its territory. While the Taliban itself has not carried out major attacks outside Afghan territory, they have given shelter and support to terrorist cells that undermine regional security, particularly at Pakistan's expense. One of these groups is the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, or TTP for short, which is an anti-Pakistan militant organization with massive territorial claims. The Afghan Taliban reportedly supports the TTP with weapons, training, and safe locations, especially in the eastern provinces of Kunar and Nangarhar. Of course, the Taliban denies involvement, but many within its senior ranks have close ties with TTP militants, and TTP leaders have appeared openly at official events in the Afghan capital. As a result, Pakistan accuses the Taliban government of failing to constrain the TTP, if not outright supporting it. This accusation, however, is tied to a much older grievance, one that traces back to the Durand Line. Drawn in 1893 by the British Empire, the Durand Line split ethnic Pashtun communities between Afghanistan and what later became Pakistan. the line itself was based on the range of British rifles, not on where people actually lived. Little to no consideration was given to geography, history, or the realities on the ground. For the locals, the agreement was a disaster. It cut through communities that had coexisted for centuries. The Pashtun people were particularly affected. The new border divided their towns and cities. Even now, 132 years later, successive Afghan governments continue to reject the Durand Line. That's not surprising though. Nearly three times as many ethnic Pashtuns live in Pakistan as they do in Afghanistan, which has always fueled strong irredentist feelings in Kabul. So, while Islamabad treats the Durand Line as a recognized international border, Kabul, and by extension the TTP, views it as illegitimate. The TTP's self-proclaimed objective is therefore to stoke instability and undermine Pakistan's authority in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and parts of Balochistan, and then have these regions join Afghanistan. This is the map often associated with that claim. An Afghanistan that borders the Indus River at the Attock Bridge and snakes down along the river to the sea. It encompasses all ethnic Pashtun territories and then some. There is, of course, strategic planning behind this territorial claim. If an Afghan government were ever able to unite the Pashtun people into a single political entity, Pashtun dominance, currently about 40% of Afghanistan's population, would grow stronger. Moreover, control over sparsely populated Balochistan would give Afghanistan access to the sea. These two goals, becoming an ethnic majority and escaping landlocked isolation, could form the foundation for a modern, centralized Afghan state. It's a vision that has been shared by all Afghan governments, old and new, including the Taliban and the TTP. However, it's doubtful that Pakistani Pashtuns would want to join with their Afghan kin, just as it is unlikely that ethnic Balochi would want anything to do with Afghanistan. Pakistan has plenty of social and economic problems, but it's miles ahead of Afghanistan in all metrics. Still, such facts may prove irrelevant. Ordinary people rarely get to decide their fate when caught in the gears of geopolitics. This post by the Afghan Interior Ministry leaves little to interpretation. It literally says that the Durand Line between Afghanistan and Pakistan was imposed by force and that the Taliban seeks to reclaim the usurped territories. Broadly speaking, while the Afghan position is understandable, it is by no means unique. In fact, many ethnic communities are divided by borders. It's almost a common feature. Heck, even within Afghanistan, there are ethnic groups that are split from their counterparts abroad, including the Persian, Tajik, Uzbek, and Turkmen communities. And while the Durand Line was indeed drawn by the British, so too were all of Afghanistan's other borders. The northern boundary with Uzbekistan and Tajikistan was delineated by the British diplomat Nicholas O'Connor, while the western frontier with Iran was mapped by Louis Dane. So if Afghanistan can claim half of Pakistan's territory on ethnic grounds, it inevitably raises questions about its own legitimacy, since roughly 60% of Afghanistan is inhabited by non-Pashtuns. The point is, the Taliban's nationalist and irredentist logic is short-sighted. These types of conflicts always cut both ways, and if pressed on, the blowback could be unimaginable. Since early 2024, tensions between Pakistan and Afghanistan's Taliban government have spiraled out of control. TTP fighters have stepped up attacks on Pakistani targets, especially in the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and Balochistan regions. For comparison, more than 2,600 Pakistani security personnel have been killed in the last 4 years. Media outlets in this part of the world are tightly controlled, so it's nearly impossible to verify some of the details independently. But we do know the following. In March 2024, Pakistan launched airstrikes on suspected TTP hideouts inside Afghanistan, prompting Kabul to denounce the raids as a violation of sovereignty. A few months later, in September, new skirmishes erupted when Afghan Taliban border guards exchanged fire with Pakistani forces near Kurram and Khost. By December 2024, Pakistani strikes in Paktika again targeted TTP camps, killing civilians and drawing strong protests from Kabul. The following year, in March and April 2025, there were major infiltration attempts by TTP militants into Pakistan's Waziristan region, and dozens were killed as a result. Since these events, the conflict has only accelerated. Pakistan changed its rules of engagement in August and went on the offensive. It launched a massive counter-terrorism operation against the TTP in the northwest of the country. This operation is still ongoing as we speak, and it underscores that Islamabad is now at the tipping point at which it believes it has no choice but to take unilateral action against the TTP. Since then, hostilities have continued to intensify. On October 9th, TTP militants ambushed Pakistani paramilitary troops, killing 11. A day later, Pakistan responded with airstrikes in Kabul and other Afghan positions, where senior TTP leaders were believed to be in hiding. In retaliation, Afghan Taliban forces, not the TTP, targeted Pakistani border posts along the Durand Line. This fueled hours of the most intense skirmishes reported between the two sides since the Taliban retook control of Afghanistan in 2021. Both sides claim to have inflicted heavy casualties on the other, while claiming to have sustained far fewer casualties themselves. Both sides also reported to have captured dozens of the other's border outposts during the fight. Again, in this corner of the world, these allegations are difficult to verify independently. After more than a week of fighting, mediators from Qatar and Turkey brokered a ceasefire on October 19th. Pakistani and Afghan Taliban officials pledged to curb cross-border violence and rein in militant activity. But that truce is already looking shaky. Small-scale clashes between Taliban, TTP, and Pakistani forces are sporadically ongoing and will likely persist for some time. Internal factionalism within the Taliban further complicates the enforcement of any truce. While the Taliban and the TTP have close ties, the latter enjoys complete autonomy. If the Afghan Taliban were to come down hard on the TTP, it would risk internal dissent, and so the Taliban has to cater to its internal jihadist ecosystem. Truce is therefore unlikely. But suppose, for argument's sake, that a genuine truce was restored and maintained, resolving the underlying reasons for the conflict would be exceedingly tricky. The geography of the region doesn't help either. South Asia and Central Asia form an interlinked security landscape. Any escalation could quickly draw in powers from far and near. Qatar has stepped up as a mediator and is now hosting talks. Doha maintains open channels with various factions within the Taliban when few others could, and this could be instrumental. Saudi Arabia could also get involved given its mutual defense pact with Pakistan. The Saudis view regional stability as crucial to safeguarding their growing security and economic ties with Islamabad. China, too, has stakes in the outcome. It previously mediated between the Afghan Taliban and Pakistan and holds enormous economic interests in regional stability, particularly in Pakistan. Even the United States could enter the picture. Trump has expressed interest in Bagram Air Base, and Pakistan's outreach to Washington could pave the way for US involvement, though it would come with high costs and security risks. India, meanwhile, may see opportunity in the chaos. Afghanistan is rich in rare earths, and with China's export controls in place, India's defense industry is left with growing shortages. New Delhi would therefore welcome any chance to secure rare earth deposits, even if it means strange bedfellows. Interestingly, the Taliban's reimagined map of Afghanistan, where the border extends to the Indus, leaves out the disputed Kashmir region entirely in the hands of India. This suggests a larger strategic move, in which India and Afghanistan team up to pressure Pakistan from both sides. It so happens that the Taliban's foreign minister visited India precisely as border clashes with Pakistan were escalating. The details of their discussions remain undisclosed, and the timing may well be coincidental. However, it could just as easily signal a deeper strategic alignment taking shape. Even so, the interplay here is complex. India joining forces with the Taliban is not exactly a good look, and Pakistan could counteract by strengthening ties with Bangladesh or backing the revival of the Northern Alliance. The outcome could be a new, fragile balance, with layers of deterrence stacked on one another. All of this suggests that more episodes of cross-border attacks between the Afghan Taliban, the TTP, and the Pakistani army are likely in the coming months. That is hardly what the region needs, though. Afghanistan has not seen a single year of peace since 1978, and now the Taliban leadership is steering the country toward yet another war. Sometimes, power lies in holding back. In chasing imaginary lines, Afghanistan risks crossing a very real one, the line between power and ruin. I've been your host Shirvan from Caspian Report. If you approve of what we do, please leave a comment, hit the like button, and mayhaps share the video. In any case, thank you for your time, and sağ ol.